Blog Talk Radio.
How you doing? This is Chef Rob.
Welcome to another session with Chef True Chef Rob.
Hold on, we got some echo problems here. We'll be doing a little something different today. I got my co-host today. It's Diva Marie.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, baby, let them know who you are.
I'm Diva Marie.
And we're going to be interviewing today, Rodney. You don't want us to give you your last name, do you? Still running from the FBI?
No. It's cool.
Oh, wow. We got to do something with that. Having a few problems here. Let me go ahead and run to a commercial real quick. Play this track right fast while I straighten that out.
Somewhere go mass if you can't hold them in, control the bypass, if you want to fix. Tell them kids we run. Go in a year one class, if it's a pack of money, fast man, go around with people.
Injustices and experiences that they go through in prison life. So, Rodney, get right into it. Just explain, introduce yourself and just go ahead, jump right into it. Where you want, what are you going to go? Beginning, middle, do your thing.
First of all, my name is Rodney Rizak McGowan, and I'm age 40. And I did 20 years in the Arkansas Department of Corrections. Really, mostly my thing is to get message out there to the young brothers and sisters to let them know that, that prison life, from my experience, seeing through my eyes, you can't go back if you just listen to what I tell you about the stuff that I experienced when I was locked up.
Well, what did you experience?
Well,
you know, okay, go back to this. You know, not dealing with the offense. You know,
okay.
You can keep that to yourself.
Right.
So, like, the reception station, the first day. What was the first day like?
Well, the first day was like, I mean, I was in the zone from the time they gave me the time they gave me.
Oh.
I was in the zone. I mean,
well, you can
like,
deal with that. I like to hear that, too. That's
yeah.
real good. When the judge told you you're going to go hit, bam, you're going to get this amount of time, how were you feeling? What was your emotions?
Well, the only thing that I really heard was the door closing behind me when I left the courtroom.
Ooh.
I mean, everything, after he said 20 years, it was like the door, you know. That was the only thing else I heard after that. He said that he was talking, you know, but I never really just heard anything else until the door closed when I walked out the courtroom, and I was still, you know, my understanding was like zero because I know I don't supposed to be here.
Yeah.
But if I, you know, would have turned state evidence, I was still going to be through the system, so why not go on, you know?
Yeah, go on ahead and do what you got to do.
Right.
Seems pretty rough. That's devastating. That's devastating. So once those doors closed and you were on the other side, when did it hit you that you were going to be there? Was it that day, the next day, the next week, the next year?
No, that ain't something that I thought about. I never did think about how long I was going to be there because I knew I was in for a ride.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't know how I was going to do it. And when I first went in, it was like my understanding was just complete zero. I had, you know, could nobody tell me what to do, even though this is your prison? I don't care, you know.
Yeah.
And that's the way I was feeling.
Yeah.
And I was
being a true gladiator,
right,
like I was
right,
saying. Yeah.
Right.
We were talking about that. You know, just because that I think that's the thing that gives a lot of people a little bit more time is they come in with that attitude.
Right.
Yeah. You
and
know, it can extend your time.
It's called doing time backwards. What it's called.
Okay.
Time
so how many people you saw doing that? Did you think you'd go ahead and be involved in that? That would be you?
No.
Or when did you realize that term about doing time backwards?
Well, when I became a disciplinary problem, I was a disciplinary problem.
Mm-hmm.
I caught them like every 30 minutes. It was like I was a disciplinary problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like my understanding, and I didn't have none. Anything that I went through, but it took me some years to get a hold to that person because, you know, sometimes I don't care who you are, you got to conversate with that person inside of you, and get, especially if he out of control.
Right.
You know, you got to get some kind of understanding with him. And I chose, like, you know, because the road I was going, somebody was going to, you know, kill me in there, I was going to kill somebody, you know, and I had to get a hold to myself because my anger, like, the whole time I was there, I took, like, four anger management classes. And
how long were the classes?
The classes last 30
minutes.
30 minutes. To an hour.
Okay, when you took the... Okay, so let's say you did an hour, but was it like one time they say, okay, well, you got anger management for an hour for 30 days? Anger management for an hour in 2 months. Did they give you a stretch at it, or they just give you anger management here and there?
Yeah, they like do you classes. They have anger management classes like every Wednesday or Thursday.
Was that mandatory for you?
Yeah, I mean you could sign up and they put like if you sign up for programs like anger management, AA, you know, Alcoholic Anonymous,
mm-hmm.
you know, all kind of programs like that. They take time off your card, off the back of your time, though. Not
mm-hmm.
the front, the back.
Mm-hmm.
So
you don't be in that less. So Alcoholics Anonymous classes? I mean,
yeah, they have, you know, because...
Why would you need it if you locked up? Because you should be off alcohol, so your craving should be down a whole lot because you're going ahead and everything else with alcohol. Or
well,
so everybody thinks.
Yeah, so everybody thinks, but you know, like, it's a lot of people that's straight alcoholics that's in the joint and they still drinking while they're in the joint, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, you heard of potato water, bootlegs, or whatever you call
it. Oh, not me. I'm not. I've heard of
hooch.
Hooch.
Yeah.
You know, bread and potatoes and stuff.
Right. Yeah. I know they make it there, you know, so.
Looks nasty as all get out, but hey, it'll get you there.
Right.
like rocket fuel.
Oh yeah.
Oh man. So how did it make you feel? You know, when you start realizing, hey, look, I'm gonna be here. Once you got, you know, all your bedding and everything, start feeling like how you didn't want to adjust in.
No.
No.
No, I didn't even have no feeling for adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like the whole time I was thinking that I wasn't adjusting to the prison system,
mm-hmm.
I was adjusting.
You were
and
conforming.
Didn't even know it. I didn't even know it because I was...
What gave you a clue? What gave you a clue that you were adjusting? Well, you knew the schedules, this, how to do the procedure?
Right.
Yeah, you just knew how to follow things. Yeah.
Right.
See, that still sounds like the military in a way, huh? That's where I knew I was in there. I was like, oh, I ain't going home for a while. They got me. Yeah. But prison life is a little bit different, though. In basic training, it seems like it's the same with basic training in some terms of prison life.
Right, because they, you know, like down south, they have whole squad. And whole squad means, you know, you go out in the field and
mm-hmm.
you work from 7 in the morning all the way up until 12 o'clock.
What are you doing when you're working? What are you doing?
Out there chopping everything from chopping cotton, picking cotton, picking beans.
You pay for that?
No, you don't. They do the good time. They do good time. What I mean by that?
No money?
No money.
Hmm.
Sound like modern day slavery, don't it?
Yeah.
But they work you so that you could get good time.
No money.
No money. 60. You staying.
You see what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying? No money. So this is how I'm seeing it. This is what just popped in my head. Okay, so I'm in here and I'm working and I'm going ahead and picking cotton. What you gonna do with this cotton? You gonna go out there and do something out there and make money off of it? So shouldn't I get a cut of that money when I'm getting out of here?
But see, they ain't even on that down there. They ain't on that at all.
So it is slavery.
Yeah, more or less. But see, the inmates look at it like, that's my time cut, you know, on my time.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? If I do right,
mm-hmm.
you got to do right.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that, don't catch any, be no disciplinary problem. When it's time to go to work. You're scheduled for 160 days in the field.
Mm. Hot.
And you, yeah. 160 days and it's like every 60 days you go up before a classification.
Mm-hmm.
And the classification will, you know, either give you a job change or they'll remain you in the field.
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on if they feel like you're ready to come in the building or for a job on the inside.
So being out there in that hot sun is a little bit more, just like a little bit. Like punishment a little bit.
Right. Because they got tractors and everything that could do all the stuff that we do,
but
we was doing. They have tractors and all kind of stuff down there to do the stuff that we was doing, but they rather, you know, and they said it was for our, you know, benefit or whatever.
But you can always tell who the people were working in the field. They was always the most tired around.
Right.
They was always,
right.
I'm going to pass out. What time you got to get up to get out in the field?
Well, you get up early in the morning, like 4 to go eat.
Go eat.
4 in the morning?
Just inconceivable, isn't it? I couldn't see myself doing that.
And then after that, you go back to the barracks after chow, and then 7 o'clock, everybody heading out towards with the catch-out gate, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
You go out there and stand until your squad call. You go get on the trailer, and they take you to somebody's field.
Wait a minute. You're going to...
It's on their plantation.
Okay, well, you got the prison.
Right.
And you leaving off the prison compound
mm-hmm.
to go work in a cotton field.
Or a bean field.
Or a bean field.
You know.
Produce or stuff like
right
that.
Here.
See, the thing that.
They got wagons. They have wagons for different trailers, like one hole, two hole, three hole, four hole, five hole,
yeah,
six hole, and they go on like that.
Yeah, because the only thing coming up in my mind,
they're going to take you to somebody's private property and going to work you, and you still ain't getting paid.
Right. And, you know, they go, they have like 12 to 13 whole squad riders with guns
mm-hmm.
on horses. And I'm going to tell you about my experience. I had just, you know, I got tired of it, really, because it wasn't doing me no good.
Okay.
One day I was out in the field and I was chopping and, you know, just the things that the penitentiary life was just, everything was coming at me fast and the whole squad rider caught me off guard and I just told him, like, you know what? I grabbed that hoe in my hand and slung it far as I could throw it and I told him to call the lieutenant and come get me and take me to the hole. After then, I stayed in the hole for 5.5 years in the hole.
Mm.
What is the hole?
The hole is like I think it's like an 8x5 cell. You got a bed in there, a toilet.
How long do you stay in there? You know, how long do you stay in there? I mean, before you can come out, you don't go, you do everything in there?
Yeah, I mean, every 30 days that you do back in the hole, they let you go to Ag Sed,
mm-hmm.
which is another lockdown, but it's like for rowdy, you know, inmates
mm-hmm.
that can't deal with general population. So
mm-hmm.
you go there every 30 days.
And at Ag Sed, what is that, administrative segregation?
Yes.
Okay. And you actually spend the 5 days in the small cell, then they'll put you back there with the ag sector.
No, 30.
30 days.
Yeah, you do after every 30 days. It depends on how much time you got in the hole. If you go to the hole with 30 days, you could do like 20 days, 22 days,
mm-hmm.
get out. 23 days, get out. Some people have got out 18, 19. That's more, you know. But if you got more than that, then, you know, sometimes if you go like, say you got 60 days in the hole,
mm-hmm.
you do 30 without a disciplinary back there in the hole, they'll let you out, you
mm-hmm.
know, stuff like that. They used to try to give you a break on that kind of stuff.
I don't know if I could spend that time in the hole. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
What
do you do? What do you do to go ahead and pass the time?
Well, it's like sit back there and write songs and raps and
okay,
know,
let's hear one of your raps, man. You ready?
Wrote this song. It was like a religious song,
mm-hmm.
but I wanted to see where my rap game was, for as you know, if I could, you know, instead of rapping about clothes and money and stuff, see if I could rap about God or, you know, something that's spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with this little rap called I'm at a Stage.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay, yeah, let's
right.
run this track real quick. We're going to take a quick break. Play this real fast.
Now, to understand the struggle, to understand pain.
Struggling hard and chasing dreams. What you know about having no car, rent being due and no blame. What you know about sacrificing all your wants for all your needs. What you know about loving your child just to find out that ain't your
pain.
Oh,
my joy, my pain, my struggle.
dodging them cops to make ends meet. What you know about the lights being off, the gas being off, and no food to eat? What you know about Goodwill clothes, while your friends dress fly in junior high? What you know about grandma's words when she said, one day, boy, you gon' shine? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. Welcome back to the Truth Chef Rob Show with my co-host today, Diva Marie, and my guest, Rodney. Rodney's about to go ahead and give us a few lines of his current, should I say your current rap or something you've been working on, something you've been thinking about?
Right.
Okay, so I don't want to get in your way. Do your thing. You know, here. Go on ahead, do your thing. Just be. Take a deep breath.
Go like, I'm at a stage, I've got to turn the page, sick and tired of living in sin, gotta let Jesus in. I got to tell you that I'm sick and tired of living in sin. Cause when I was out there in the street with the thugness in and not the pen. And now I'm calling on the Lord cause I'm falling fast. At night I be in my bed having visions of me getting a blast. It been many nights I woke up in the cold sweat. And I can see myself getting killed with my own gat. And I get on my knees, I call upon the Lord. I say, if that's a sign, yo God, I think I saw it. It been so many nights I read John 3:16. But coming up as a shorty, that verse didn't apply to me. I started hanging, banging, slanging in my city hoods and living life as a lost soul up to no good. So I said to myself, boy, you know you can't win, cause if you violate parole, you going back to the pen. And now I'm thinking it's time to get your life right and go to church and get on up out that street life. I'm at a stage.
Okay, look here, we're going to put some money to that, man. I'm going to put some, oops, I'm thinking ahead, ain't I? put some music to that. Oops, sorry. What made you think of that? What brought you to that? Because it was kind of hard lyrics there, man.
Well, it was like, you know, I had, some guys told me, they said, man, to be, you know, to be a rapper, you got to be versatile. You got to, you know, flex your skills. What I mean by flex, see if you could go in other places with your rap, instead of just on cars and money and females, you know.
Right. So, you know, that sounds so, Mr. McGowan, when you wrote this rap, what type of mood were you?
I mean, I was just I was determined to prove those guys that I can do it.
Oh, good. So you're more or less a go-getter, even though your circumstances were restricting at the time.
Right.
Okay. Where would you like to see this song go at this point, now that you're a free man?
Well, I would really like for this song to just go to everybody that would listen to it, you know, and support it, because it's a song that if you just listen to the lyrics, it'll tell you everything that you know that's life for, as far as in the spiritual world, but it's real.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, obviously Jesus has not been there to help thug life at this point, so do you think that would reach them?
Well, not necessarily reach them, but, I mean, long as it helps somebody, okay. And that's all I'm trying to do is just touch somebody with it.
Okay, so in other words, if just one person, that one person that it may touch may make the difference for everybody.
Right.
Okay. I watch churches and I watch what goes on and how we ignore our reality. And I almost every family you talk to has somebody in prison or going to prison, or on parole, or something affiliated with the system. And so at this point,
they got the system got their hooks in them someplace.
Yeah, you know, like either you know,
you win it somehow, some way, you know, and it's sad. It's real
they
sad.
Get you with the drug. They plant the drugs in the community. They get you if you sell them. They get you if you...
Well, not so much if you're involved in it, they'll create it. Because I've seen quite a few individuals that were on the right path. But once they got to they didn't even veer off. It was sort of like they was yanked off the street and made victims in a way, made criminals. And by harassing them and then eventually planting stuff on them. You know, that happened to my cousin years ago.
Now, harassing them in what way? In their cars?
In their cars
or while they're walking?
Walking down the street in cars. Sometimes these cops will go ahead and they will come to your house once they know where you stay.
Wow.
Is there an individual that'll call you to your house? So it happened.
Mr. McGowan had shared some things with me before this interview about how it all was a trap. You want to let us in on that?
Well, what I was telling Diva Marie was about the trap is because, you know, it's like the prison system set up from the inside, and they wait on you to come in, and they see what you like, and they're going to make sure that, okay, if this is what he like, this is what they like, we're going to put it in there.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go and bust them so they can stay a little longer.
That's almost like what's on the outside because my brother's in there.
Similar. I watched it for years and years. I didn't understand it, but it started coming to me. After, like, I started seeing the brothers that go out in the street and don't even stay out there a good month or two. And they already back smiling, telling me what they did out there in the world. And, you know, and I made a promise to God that I wouldn't be one because I heard it for many years, man. Many years. Some got out there and got killed. Some got out there and, you know, did right. But it was more got out there, got killed, and came back than got out there and did right. And that's just, I didn't want to be one of the ones that get out of here and, you know, I want to show them that you can stay out here. And if there's any brother and sister out there that think that prison life is the life, it's not right. It's not a way of thinking.
Yeah, it is.
And you need to, you know, just listen at me, and I'm going to try to get you there.
So what do you think? Talk a minute briefly, so, on things you feel you missed out on. I think that's the biggest thing. That would be the biggest thing, things you missed out on.
You know, like, when I was incarcerated, I had no outside help at all. You know, I did it by myself the whole 20 years. It was like, when I turned 18 years old, I went in when I was 17. When I turned 18, they had a plasma center on the inside of the prison. So they, you know, for people that don't get mail in or got nothing, no funds coming in, they let them go to the plasma center and donate blood. So I used to donate my blood like you get $7 every 2 weeks. You get $7 twice a week, I mean. You're supposed to get 10, but they said 3 of it go to the MA Welfare Fund, which go on, you know, for the people that ain't got nothing.
It's like a tax.
Yeah. Oh, they had their thing down.
They barely give you anything. They gonna tax that.
Right. Wow. And they was even giving, you know, doing taxes on you when you get your money in and commissary. They fixed it up to where they could get taxed because, like, when it first started out back in the 80s and they had coupon money, like dollars, 50 cent pieces, you know. And then they took all that because they wanted to do it by the books. So they kept your money on the books where they could tax you the way they want to tax you when your money come in, if you got money coming in. You know, like when you buy something from the commissary, and they make sure all that, you know, they get theirs and the regular tax. So, you know, it was like, that experience, man,
the system ain't fair,
but you know it is a trap, and you can get caught up in the prison life.
Okay, give me a for instance, the worst you've seen, and you know it was just an obvious trap. What you've seen, or maybe what you would probably experience.
Well, I mean, like I had said, told you last. It was when I was trying to explain to you about the, you know, what I went through and what I seen.
Mm-hmm. the young rapper dude.
Right. And this guy was so talented. Mm-hmm. You know, he could rap about anything. You know, he see a domino on the table, 6'4", and he'll rap about it. And it was like the penitentiary life, though, it had him. Mm-hmm. Because when he first came in, he was like, he didn't mess with nobody. He was chilled out. But once he got used to, you know, and he saw a couple of his homies, he got into the prison life, and those was the guys, like, going to be there for a minute. Mm-hmm. You know, and they had a tendency, they don't really be trying to get their homeboys in trouble, but they do. And they don't really look at it like that. This my homie, you know, and that's where, you know, he rolling with us, whatever we do. I could tell you a situation. This dude, he had just got out the hole. They call him KT. And he had just got out the hole. And one of his partners had broken a skinhead box, which you know, and...
breaking in the stuff while you were locked
up? Yeah, and he broke in his locker box.
That's a common thing, isn't it?
Right. Broke in his locker box, and he... You know, and they stole everything out, so all the skinheads got together. Okay, KT had got out the hole that day, so by them knowing that KT is his partner, and they know what type of person KT is, he real violent. So it's like they had to get him first, and he died and didn't even know what he died for. Mm. He had just got out the hole, and all of them was coming down the hall. From the chow hall, they met up in the chow hall, mm-hmm. and I guess that's where they, you know,
that's where they got said, to read their plan.
Yeah.
So, they organized everything.
Right. So when he come out the chow hall, it's like, I mean, when he came, he was coming from the hole this way, and they was coming down the hall. He getting ready to go in the barracks. They hit him about 60 times. Mm. Yeah. Right there, he died right there in front of the barracks.
What are the skinheads?
I mean, it's just a racial white group, you know. They supremacist, white supremacists.
Yeah.
Are these people incarcerated or they work there?
Yeah, they
there's a lot of skinheads walking on the streets, too.
But, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, that's, really, to be honest with you, that's everywhere. You got supremacists, you got, gangbangers, you know, on the police forces. Mm. I mean, you got all that. Yeah. So that really, you know, that's everywhere.
In the military too.
Yeah, right. Because see, what people ain't understanding, before they were anything, they were men. And when we accept the fact that all of us are men, mm-hmm. and respect each other as men, we wouldn't have that many problems. And we could raise our children better because I'm not saying everybody, but it's a lot of people that teach their children hate.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, I'm talking about my brothers and sisters.
Right.
I'm not just talking about the white folks. I'm talking about black people too.
Right.
You know, because they, you know, and it's not right because we here together and it's like, we should be able to live together without. I should be able to go out my house and don't be frightened that somebody finna do something to me, you know, or who finna ride by and shoot. You know, I shouldn't be scared of that. Or what I got on, you won't.
Should never be afraid of, especially your own. You
right.
know, especially somebody that's just like it.
Right. And that's just more depressing.
That is. It makes me feel a lot worse, you know, that you can't see a lot of us stick together. And they say they do, but they don't. But then you walk outside your house or your place, and you got to look around because you feel that your own people are going to go ahead and jump on you and hurt you right away.
All right. You know, it's sad. But
it's a reality, and that's what we need to face at this point.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that
keep on, don't give up on it. You know, keep on talking about it. Because that's what you, that's what most psychiatrists always try to tell people. This is like, in a way, what you went through is right, at this stage, if anything starts to affect you, it will call it post-traumatic stress. You know, the effects of a traumatized situation. So, and you just got to kind of keep your head in the game. I want to, you know, go back to, I want to try to deal with it if you can remember that your first month.
My first month, I'm going to tell you what I did. My first month, I came to, like, mail call every day, waiting to hear my name called. I did that for 5 years straight. And it was like, not to just to leave off the month, but I mean, that's mostly what I was living for, is to hear something from somebody outside that knew me, you know. And for 5 years, it became a time I would write letters and put my name at the bottom and somebody else's name at the top and send it back to myself.
Really?
Just to, you know, hear my name at mail call.
Wow.
You know,
wow. Damn.
And I learned to deal with stuff on my own.
Can I ask you, how angry were you? You said once you got in there, you were, you know, pretty rebellious and, you know, acting out.
Right.
How angry? I just can't imagine somebody in lockup for 20 years and no communication with the outside. You probably fought every time you turned around. You say you was getting in trouble every 30 minutes.
Right.
You know, and how angry were you? You went to anger management. I mean, do you want to fight?
Yeah, you know, put it in a level. If you go here, like you can go ahead this, like, from, go from 0 to 10, and being like from 1 to maybe 3, well, I can just go ahead and give you a look. And then like 4 to maybe 7, well, I might push you. And then from that 8 to 10, I'm just going to all out maul you.
Right.
See what I'm saying?
Well,
you know, go from 0 to 10.
My understanding from that was like, I didn't have no understanding, period. It was like, if you look at me wrong, we finna get it. Whether you were looking at me like that or not, because I was young and I felt like everybody was finna try me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have to act the way I acted, but it was like, I ain't supposed to be here, so I don't care if they, you know, kill me or not. Mm-hmm. And that was the mind frame I had. No, and then every day at mail call, it was like it was confirming that, you know, you by yourself, man. You by yourself. You got to do this.
You didn't get no letters from the outside?
No letters at all. All but the ones that I wrote to my, you know.
Hey, I know.
Just, but other than that, no, I, you know.
I know you got in touch with somebody. I mean, was anybody, everybody's excuse for not even sending you a hello or recognizing you or something?
Well, you know, like, when I got out, and I saw my family, because I prayed to God that he would just give me the heart to take all that blackness out that I got for, you know, towards my family. You know, it ain't their fault that I'm in there, but I was incarcerated on, you know, on just being there with somebody that I didn't know what was going on. So I don't feel like if the thing was that they was supposed to, I didn't look at it like that, but I feel like at least on my birthday I deserve a card.
You
know?
Didn't get nothing.
But I didn't, nothing. I did 20 years without nothing. And, you know, like, it was hard on me, man, but I handled it. And I prayed to God that he let me keep my, you know,
keep your mind set straight.
You
know
what I'm saying?
All right. Let me take a quick break. And, talk about a few things. Let me acknowledge a few people in my chat, some people I know. Hey, Pundit. Hey, Yoda. What's up, Wolverine? I want to
want you to talk a little bit about before you went to prison. Okay, so I want you to think about that real quick.
It's funny, right? They say things that change. No more message in the music. Record sales down. Gas prices up. No more love for your life. No more life for your love. Change is long overdue. Something gotta give.
You can trot around the planet or watch it on the news. Somebody's getting shot, the weatherman's looking confused. He's reporting to a nation full of zombies, strung out on Starbucks and stitched up and bitching Amber Crombie. Don't get it mixed up, me too, I have insomnia. At times, but don't be walking around here blind, feeling all around, trying to find a righteous path. It's appealing when I rhyme, so every time I hit the mat, this, you know, the common folk, blue collar, day-to-day workers that squeeze a dollar so they maybe can swallow a little, not a lot of, just enough to fill that bottle. But it's $1 million a gallon for some gas to get to work tomorrow. That's if you got a gig and can't swim in carpool. You rob Peter to pay Paul to make do, make you wanna write a note and take a pistol to that bank too, then pass it to the teller, but you know better.
They're trying to tell us to stay strong, but every day we losing
great debaters debate about who's the greatest MC. Subject matter don't matter because the verse is empty. No food for thought, nothing for the brain to digest. So I guess it'd be a brat who can jab talk the best. But I give them light and like the traffic I direct. Inspiring their life like they was actors on my set. As if I was a pilot, take them higher than the day. I'd be a liar if I wasn't sick and tired of this mess.
They're trying to tell us to stay strong, but every day we losing jobs. We don't even want to talk about the man's fight. I know parole with the promise that he'll do right. But a felon has no chance for a new start. So it's back to doing hand to hand on his own blind.
Black and white, we're all the same.
Yeah.
And I know you feel my pain.
And the only hope I have to help me deal with the drama is that maybe in November I'll be cheering for Obama.
Porcupine left behind, that's the bottom line. Gotta find the grind, cause the time won't be coming back around. Get it now, step on the stars while you're reaching for the sun, but never burn a bridge. Each one, teach one. If you lend a helping hand, you may never need one.
Girl is too big.
And I heard him say that every man, woman, child was gonna be okay. I heard him say that they would bring our soldiers home in one piece today. Hey. But it's not that way. They've been selling us a dream, telling us we're on the same team. Now we all gotta deal with the lies.
It's time to tell us to stay strong.
Yeah.
But every day we're losing jobs.
Every day.
From Park down to Beverly Hills.
Oh.
Something's gonna have to give.
Have to give.
Across the world they live in fear.
Oh yeah.
But it's the same thing over here.
Over here.
If
yeah.
You can hear me on Capitol Hill.
I know you hear me.
Something's gonna have to give.
Okay, we're back. This is Chef Rob with Diva Maria. We got our guest here, Rodney, Mr. McGowan. We were talking,
And I wanted to know just how did you wind up in prison? There was no one around, no role models and stuff like that to go ahead and pull you, yank your chain, say, hey, boy, you know, if you had a pit bull, you'd be pulling this chain. Hey, don't veer out. Was nobody pulling your chain to go ahead and help you veer out?
No, it's because, like, I grew up in a house of six, and I never knew, you know, my father. You know,
mm-hmm.
I just grew up under my brothers and my
mm-hmm.
sister's father. And it's like I always longed for that, you know, the guy that I can call and say, hey, Daddy, you know, can
mm-hmm.
I help you? I always longed for that, and I believe that played a big part in my, you know, why I was being so a troubled child like I was.
What would you, for instance, what would call you a troubled child?
Well, it was like I was getting in fights, doing something that ain't right,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I never had no father figure, you know, to tell me, son, you know that ain't right, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I wanted that all my life. I wanted that, you know, till when I got big enough to understand what a father was. I used to listen at them come home from school and call their daddy, daddy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I always wondered where mine was, you know. And it was really
that could be devastating. That could be that. My dad wasn't there either, you
right.
know. And when I've seen him a few times in my life. He died a few years back. But it was, he and I didn't agree with a lot of stuff. Once I got some age and I started talking to him, eventually I wound up hitting him in the mouth. So, yeah, I didn't agree with a lot of stuff. You know, I'm going to tell you briefly. He was, when I was talking to him, he was cracking jokes about when my mom was giving birth to my sister, and how he was out with another woman.
Right.
And he was laughing and stuff. And I didn't see that right because we grew up hard. We had a lot of issues. My mom didn't have money. She had almost eight kids to deal with, you know. So she had a lot of kids to deal with. So, you know.
Right.
And he wasn't there. And he thought that was funny. And I didn't see it funny.
Right.
So, you know, now I don't respect no guy to be doing that. I hit you in the mouth. But, you know, I can understand your point. That could go ahead and put you into a wrong mindset.
A zone to where it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Because especially if you really wanted that father to be there.
Right.
And he wasn't there. That's why most people that know me know that kids, I claim, you know, kids like me and I like kids. Everywhere. That's why I talk on, you know, I usually talk with Beyonce Fox, Leon
mm-hmm.
Rogers.
Yeah.
When they have, you know, things like shootings in Chicago with the kids. There's a lot of them in Chicago dying, you know, and all over the world, over nonsense, you know. And
yeah,
it's just wild out there. And, I mean, if it's anybody that could just hear what I'm saying and understand that it takes time for a person to heal from something that he knew it wasn't supposed to be.
Right.
You know, he supposed to. Every kid, I feel, should live a normal life. You know, there's so many of them out there dying, and they dying young.
Okay, wait, I want you to finish that. But what would you consider a normal life?
A normal life is living till they get 21 and, you know, going and getting education, you know, and living their life. That's
the system that has been set before us, we just follow that little system.
Right.
Okay, and I agree in a way, but the father figure not being there.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, you said you were a troubled child. What do you want to say to the young world who's maybe feeling what you once felt as a troubled child?
Well,
they think somehow that this is a glamorous life, and I'm a beautician, and I know it's not glamorous. It's pretty ugly.
Yeah, I thought it was glamorous. I kind of like all the women I see coming out the shops.
I could stay there all day eating chips.
Well, that's a reality that's true, but however, we're talking about a troubled child right now.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
And,
what would you say to the young world? That's how, you know, it's pretty ugly to choose that life, but you got to feel good about yourself. It's not your parent. It's not your fault. It's not the child's fault that the parents are the way that they are or the dad is incarcerated. So many kids live and their dads are incarcerated and the mothers are left and stuck with the responsibility to raise the child, and then the child knows that his dad is in jail, so he follows suit, sadly enough, and they think that that's somehow glamorous, or it makes them tough, or it makes them feel strength behind that.
Well, what I could say to this is, like, to all the single mothers out there that, you know, that's doing it on their own and having their business with their kids and, you know, raising them to the best of their ability. I mean, I get on both knees to all them sisters because it is a hard job to do, you know, by yourself.
Right.
And I got much respect for women that take on them responsibility. And as far as the troubled child go, if you're a troubled child and you out there, it's like, You got to want to change within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to that inner
right.
person that you have to talk to.
Right. And you got to because it could get so far out there to where you just lost and you go in your own little. You'll be there in your own world. And can't nobody tell you nothing different because you done set your mind to this and. It's out there now, and just as well as you are, and ready for anything. So what I would say for us to any child out there is, you know, respect your parents. Respect your parents, and parents respect the kids, you know, because it's a lot of, that's why a lot of kids is like the way they are now. You know, because if there's no respect in the homes, people smoking weed and smoking cigarettes right in front of the kids, holding babies. It's not right. It's not right. That's why they grew up the way they are, cussing their moms and because you didn't show them no respect when they was young.
Right.
You know, but I mean, even though I went through what I went through, I still love my mom. Because you don't got number one. And when she gone, that's it. You know, and I pray God to take that black spot out of my heart I had for my family, for not being there for me in them times. And, you know, I forgive my family because God told me to forgive them, and I forgive them.
We're gonna pick this up next week, man, and we're gonna leave off right here. This is your story, man. We're gonna get you a nice book deal here with this here, boys. Put these notes together and get the right people. But yeah, this is our Truth Chef Rob. We're gonna be signing off. Dee Marie, why don't you give a plug for your shop?
I'm Dee Marie. I'm a hairdresser, and I work in East Dundee at 10 East Main. You can reach us at www.divabeautyunique. One word, divabeautyunique.com. Contact us.
You leave your phone number.
The phone number is 847-844-1788. If I might add, Mr. McGowan came to me for an ebony male makeover, and he's taking his do-rag off his head at the moment. We're getting him a new look for himself and for the community. So this has been the first experience for me, but I have to say that I've enjoyed it. And I had a chance to talk with another reform thug. He said at the time, those when you're in that life, you think that you're invincible. And so, you know, we can elaborate on that next time.
Yeah, we're going to have to try to get him around, too, So I'm trying to go ahead and grab as many folks as I can.
Yeah.
That's my show. Thanks for signing in. Say good night, everybody.
Good night.